Hey everyone, welcome to the Weekend Bite presented by the Wall Street Breakfast. I'm Daniel Snyder, and there is a lot to dive into this episode. We're talking about the Russia invasion of Ukraine, Q4 GDP numbers, Fed futures on interest rate hikes, and how it affects your money. And that brings us to the geopolitical risks in the market. Here to tell us more about some updates on the Russia-Ukraine front and a list of stocks with direct exposure to Seeking Alpha. With direct exposure is Seeking Alpha's own managing editor, Kim Kahn. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me. Right now we've got a market reacting to a full-scale Russian invasion of Ukraine. As we're recording this, President Biden has just finished speaking, going over a raft of sanctions that Western countries are implementing almost immediately on Russia, which is aimed at causing economic pain for this invasion. But there's air attacks, there's troop movement near Kyiv. And so it's a very fluid situation, and I think it's really interesting to look about. If we look now as we're recording how the market's reacting, it's very interesting. We started out with massive selling in stocks and yields plunging and commodities surging. And throughout the day, things have changed quite a bit. The NASDAQ is now in positive territory. You're seeing a lot of the tech names moving higher. Gold is off its highs, and as is crude oil, and Bitcoin has paired some of its gains. And we're watching a very fluid market kind of react to a situation where everybody was really prepared to see a huge risk and plunge today.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Now, I mentioned that there are potentially some stocks that you might be able to note for our audience about who has direct exposure to Russia and Ukraine. Would you mind just giving us a little background on that, if you might?
Yeah, sure. I mean, JP Morgan was out with a note this week going over the stocks that they saw with the most kind of direct/indirect exposure. I mean, direct exposure to Russia-Ukraine is very small for the S&P 500. It's like 0.1% of sales. So they have to take into account a host of indirect factors. But they did have a bunch of outperformers and underperformers. Not surprisingly, in the outperformers, you've got a lot of energy names like ExxonMobil, EOG Resources, and Occidental Petroleum. There's also material names like CF Energies and Cleveland-Cliffs, and of course, the defense companies. So there's Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. And then if you look over to the underperformers, you've got a lot of airlines, of course, which are getting hit hard today. There's American Airlines, United, and Delta, and a number of different consumer companies that have exposure, in the region. McDonald's, Philip Morris, definitely, and Pepsi. And then on the infotech, there's a couple, Fortinet and Trimble, that they both mentioned. I'd also like to kind of note how interesting, the big mega cap names are outperforming today. So they're kind of living up to their moniker of the new defensive sectors. Money is going into them. And a lot of that is also having to do with the fact that real rates are moving back down. They're moving up sharply, looking into the March Fed meeting where the tightening cycle is supposed to start. But they're pulling back a lot today. And that's giving these big high growth names an opportunity to get some buying.
Yeah, we know growth has been, for the most part, pretty seeing the significant pullbacks. I mean, we're almost through the back half of earnings, and we're seeing, of course, value stocks do really well. And then a lot of growth names. I know, for instance, one that was just pointed out this week internally was Monday.com, saw a huge pullback. So the growth names are getting a little bit of a increase in their price here today. Which will be interesting to continue to watch as we go forward into next week. All right, well, let's go ahead and keep moving this show. So, Kim, we'll see you here in a little bit with Catalyst Watch, all right? Now, I'd like to go ahead and bring in our headliner for the episode. That is Susanna Streeter, Senior Investment and Markets Analyst at Hargreaves Lansdown. Susanna, it's a pleasure to have you joining us on the show this week at such a critical time. I'm sure you've been having many discussions today about what has unfolded within Russia's invasion into Ukraine. So what is it that you think needs to be communicated now more than ever to investors in the financial markets?
Well, I think really the focus is to what extent this will be a driver of inflation, because we saw the price of Brent crude hit $105 a barrel, up nearly 10%. Also, UK gas contracts up around 50% at one point, and European contracts also up. And these are all real inflationary drivers. Remember too, of course, that Russia and Ukraine together, really big exporters of wheat, and that also could drive up the commodity prices. Particularly, you got in Chicago, wheat futures are reaching highest level since 2012. So all of this is going to feed into those discussions around the table at the Fed, at the Bank of England, when they decide what to do with interest rates and monetary tightening. There is some expectation that actually in the short term, it could lead to a ratcheting up of that tightening because the Fed at the moment, the focus is on trying to keep a lid on inflation. I don't think it's going to veer away from that anytime soon. However, looking further ahead, we'll have to see what this impact will have on the wider economy, because it could mean that actually later on in the year, they perhaps won't be so brisk in tightening monetary policy and those rate hikes that we're expecting, because it could hit already. We're seeing signs that companies are struggling with higher transport costs, the higher fuel costs, and actually it could have a much harder effect later on in the year.
Yeah, you brought up the Fed and you brought up inflation, which I think is the big two things weighing right now on the markets. Obviously, there's Russia and Ukraine and the geopolitical side of the war that we're seeing, but you touched on the commodities and the increase in the value of those. And of course, as what we've been seeing in the recent months is that a lot of producers that use commodities to then make products are just pushing those prices on to the consumers, right? So we're seeing that inflation bump. Now, with commodities shooting up, are we supposed to be looking for a longer amount of time of higher inflation now?
I think certainly inflation is going to linger for longer. It's going to spike higher and will hang around because of this intensifying situation in Ukraine. Certainly, we're going to see a lot of volatility in Europe. The markets were sharply down, easing off at the moment in the US as trading has progressed. But this volatility is going to remain. Certainly, we see the twists and turns in the conflict. Now, for now, consumers do seem to be shrugging off these high prices that have already been filtering through to some extent to the shops. So retail prices for January in the United States and in the UK were pretty brisk, but quite a big chunk of that was actually due to price hikes. But at the moment, there still seems to be an appetite for spending. And I think that's because consumers have piled up quite a lot of lockdown savings that they're currently eating their way through. But obviously, they are not going to last forever for all consumers. And also, we had the stimulus checks, which certainly helped. One note I found interesting, JD Sports, which is a sports chain here in the UK and has outlets across America, said it had a real boost in sales of sneakers, what we call trainers here in the United Kingdom, because it reckoned a lot of people just went out and spent their stimulus checks on those iconic pieces of footwear that the sports stars are wearing. That effect is going to fade away. And as savings dwindle as well, I think we're going to have a bit of a loss of consumer confidence in the months to come, which of course is going to have an effect on the economy. So at the moment, though, consumers do seem shrugging off what's been happening. But when you see, you know, scenes of war and bloodshed, it doesn't do much to instill confidence in consumers, whether they go to the shops or whether they're booking a holiday. And that's why you've seen travel stocks really off today as well.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to what Kim was just running us through as well with the airline stocks, seeing their hit to that as well. Now, I've got to ask you, because obviously you have a lot more detailed information about what's going on in the UK economy. And with the ECB, everybody was expecting these rate hikes to come. And now if inflation is going to run higher for longer, potentially faster at this point, are we going to start seeing more aggressive rate hikes, do you think? Because I looked at the Fed futures here just a little while ago, and everybody's expecting Powell and the Federal Reserve now to only do a 25 basis point hike here in March.
I think they're keeping a close watch on the situation in Ukraine and how it unfolds. Obviously, it adds a great deal to uncertainty. We thought we were coming out of the crisis of the pandemic, and now the world has been hit with yet another crisis. So inevitably, they will be watching. I don't think they're going to veer away from the path of rate hikes. Just how steep that path is going to be is going to come under question. I think it'll be the same for the Bank of England. The Bank of England, four policymakers voted for a steeper hike at the rate last meeting, which led some to believe that perhaps a steeper hike would be on the cards at the March meeting. I don't think that will be the case now. I think it's most likely still to stick with a quarter of a percentage point rise. So I think really what we're going to see is just a kind of cautious approach to rate rises and the reining in of stimulus. Interestingly, we're hearing noises from the European Central Bank about possibly the stimulus may have to continue for longer to support European economies, which have been sideswiped by this surprise invasion. Because although, of course, there were a lot of kind of bully tactics being deployed by Putin, I think despite that, it still comes as a real shock. And there are concerns that potentially quite a few French and Austrian banks in particular are quite exposed to Russia. So there could be repercussions in terms of the financial system to some extent in Europe. And I think the European Central Bank is keeping a close watch on that. What will be perhaps a determining factor in just how resilient the banks are across Europe is whether the SWIFT payments system actually is stopped for Russian banks, and that could potentially expose them further. We'll have to see whether these sanctions do end up extending to that.
Yeah, Susanna, I'll come kind of putting you on the spot here, but for those in our audience that don't understand the SWIFT payment system, could you just take a moment to maybe touch on that a little bit more?
So it's the kind of messaging and communication system that is used by more than 10,000 banks right around the world. And it's really crucial for all of those payments whizzing around the world. And it's the biggest payments network of its kind in the globe. And banks are hugely reliant on it. Now, Russian banks have built up their own payment system, but it's currently only used around 20% of domestic payments, not used for international payments. And of course, they could move that up a gear and try and ensure that there's a smooth running of the domestic financial system. But certainly, if Russian banks were to be excluded from this SWIFT system, it would make it very difficult for them to do business with European companies. But also, it could affect those European companies, of course, who are awaiting payments from Russian companies, which could put them in a financially tricky situation. So there will be repercussions, not just for the Russian financial system, but potentially Western financial systems and companies exposed to Russia if Russia is taken out of the SWIFT system.
Yeah, I would like to go back a second with you, because back to the oil talk around everything that's going on, right? Russia recently, just within the last few years, was added to OPEC Plus, right? And they became a huge gas supplier to specifically Germany, right? So in regards to oil now crossing over that $100 a barrel mark this week and possibly returning there, from what we heard from our guest last 2 weeks ago with Nick, from Data Trek, saying that oil is going to easily go over $100 a barrel in oil. And he was citing this Russia and Ukraine invasion going on as that being a catalyst. And we saw a blip of that, but is that going to come back now? Is OPEC Plus now just ruined?
I think there still will be a lot of talk going on with between the United States and Saudi Arabia, looking at whether Saudi Arabia can increase, turn on the taps to try and increase the amount of supply washing around the world. There is talk of the US tapping its emergency supplies to try as well reduce the price of oil, which is because it's going to hit companies so hard if it keeps mounting. What else is on the horizon, though, is a possible Iran nuclear deal. And if the agreement is reached there, that will mean that Iran can start pumping more oil, which could ease pressure on the oil price. I think there have been a number of constraints in terms of production across OPEC plus countries due to the pandemic. And I think that is why it's not going to be necessarily really easy to ratchet up supply immediately, but those talks will be ongoing. It'd be interesting to see if the US does indeed tap those emergency supplies, because of course that could be considered to be a national security concern if it goes into those supplies which are really meant to be there for a disaster situation.
Yeah, and we just actually heard from Biden a moment ago saying that oil is still one of the top things that he keeps an eye on, because higher oil prices obviously will lead to hurting the pocketbook of the consumer, and then in effect affecting the stock market. And I think that's a lot of things that investors are looking at as well. I want to ask you this, kind of getting away from Russia and Ukraine, because it's come up in conversation so much this week, specifically since the invasion of Ukraine, is the idea of China and Taiwan. Right? China's been kind of quiet during the Olympic period. The Olympics are over. We were getting notifications just this week from the defense minister over in Taiwan saying that China is sending, you know, planes over that way. Is that something that you're worried about at this time?
Obviously, it is another risk that could loom up. Already, plenty of people are saying that this is the black swan event, but there could be another one on the cards, as you say. It could be a moment that China may think the world's eyes are diverted elsewhere. This could be the moment to, you know, intensify its efforts to rein in Taiwan as it sees it. But I really don't know. Let's hope not. We certainly don't want to see that kind of crisis develop elsewhere in the world. But certainly it is another risk to watch. Fresh volatility could come certainly if that were to be the turn of events. But at the moment, I think it's really firmly Ukraine on the radar in terms of risk right now, and just waiting to see just how far this conflict could develop.
Yeah. So let me ask you personally, you know, you have a lot of discussions within the financial industry. So what is it that you are worried about most right now?
I think if there were to be a sustained and continued conflict in Ukraine that could spill over to the likes of Moldova, which is a non-NATO member country, that would be very concerning. We hear that NATO is moving up forces to protect Baltic member states. That again would be extremely concerning if the conflict overflowed into those areas and we ended up in a very long, drawn-out situation. Certainly, that would be a situation that the West would want to definitely avoid, but certainly NATO is being put on high alert. The very fact that Ukraine isn't a full NATO member country, you know, is significant. Russia hasn't attacked a NATO member country. It's attacked a non-NATO member country, which means that NATO isn't responding in force yet. Just these sanctions, which the UK has unveiled today, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying that they are tough, they are wide-reaching. We'll just have to see, because other watchers and commentators are saying, look, these sanctions are actually too little too late. So will they really hurt Russia? The problem is Russia has built up huge amounts of foreign reserves in its central bank. It has a big war chest to continue. And that's why I think Putin thinks that he can continue on this course of action. He believes that Russia has the money to survive, and also that Europe won't take drastic action because it's so reliant on Russian gas supplies. It certainly is going to hit consumers in Europe very hard if the taps are turned off to Europe, because, as you say, Germany very reliant on gas from Russia. So it's a very tense situation, and certainly one we are watching closely. And this really just does show why it's so important for a portfolio to be well diversified across a range of asset classes and geographies. Certainly don't put all your eggs in one basket. And if you have them there, it's really worth spreading them out.
Yeah. Now, quick question for you as well, being in the UK, and I think a lot of people have been pinpointing Putin's recent remarks about establishing the USSR, right? And for a lot of people over on in the Western Hemisphere, it's I think people at times forget how much the USSR reached into Europe. Is Europe, are you guys over there worried that he's going to start moving into a NATO country to try to expand the USSR to as much as it used to hold?
Well, I think that is the real concern, and that is what's concentrating minds at NATO right now, which is why they're moving units up to the Baltic states to reinforce NATO's presence there, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. And I think that is one area of real concern, that if Putin does want to extend reach into Europe, that could be the next area of target. So certainly it's really concentrating minds, which is why I think you've got this concerted effort now of NATO member countries to try and impose sanctions that they hope will hurt Russia, the Russian ruble down at a record low. Whether it will do the trick, we'll just have to wait and see. But certainly Putin seems very emboldened right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, Susanna, let me ask you one more question before we let you go. Thank you so much for all your time that you spent with us today. Is for investors right now, there's the crucial moment in time of war and everything else going on with inflation and possible interest rate hikes and everything else. And you were talking about having a diverse portfolio. So what should investors right now be focusing on doing with their investments?
Well, I suppose looking at whether they are in inflation proof as much as they can be. If you have got individual stocks within a broad portfolio, choosing them carefully, trying to ensure that you've picked the ones that could be inflation proof, if there is one at all. But, you know, as much as possible, that's what I'm trying to say. So companies, for example, with models that have subscriptions, they can be pretty resilient, particularly if they're ingrained into people's lives, which are some of the big tech giants have done so well. And I think that's partly why you've seen a slight rise again on markets recently of some of those bigger tech giants with those highly ingrained subscription services. The other thing is to look at companies that have themselves amass pretty hefty cash piles, and they're pretty cash rich, and they aren't really reliant on borrowing for future growth. They're able to draw on their big cash reserves to power ahead, and which will act as a buffer in emergent times of emergency, but also have that financial firepower to grow without borrowing on financial markets. I think investors are losing patience with companies that keep promising growth tomorrow and yet not delivering it. So steering clear from perhaps those really high growth companies. Also making sure that you're across a really broad range of asset classes. You know, gold has surged in popularity. Certainly a portion there could be beneficial. Much more interest now going back into bonds, despite the higher inflation environment, because they're seen as a safer haven. But the important thing is really is to spread your investments. Make sure you pick funds that are well diversified across a range of geographies and asset classes to have a much more defensive position.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Susanna, for joining us today. You be well, okay?
Thank you.
That is Susanna Streeter, Senior Investment and Market Analyst. Now, let's go ahead and bring Kim Kahn back in for this week's Catalyst Watch.
All right, well, looking at our Catalyst Watch list for next week, one thing really stands out, as you were just talking about, we've got an OPEC meeting next week. So that's going to be closely watched given the situation with oil prices and what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, whether or not they will react to it, you know, obviously there'll be some comments that'll be market moving, but whether there's any concrete action, most people are a little skeptical right now. I mean, they could very well just decide to turn on the taps and try and get prices down if they think that they're going up too far, too fast. But there's also a kind of concern around the energy community that, you know, the OPEC doesn't have the firepower it once did to kind of, you know, move these prices and kind of, you know, just turn on the taps and boost supply, given that, you know, you've had, you know, these years now of underinvestment in the oil industry. And it's now, you know, with ESG, with climate change, with, you know, it not being as profitable before. There just hasn't been the exploration. So there's always, you know, a great deal of oil still left to be found that, you know, wasn't before that usually normally would be. You can't just go out now and say, okay, everybody start fracking and stuff like that. So that's going to be definitely something to watch. In addition, there's a Morgan Stanley Energy and Power Conference that kind of dovetails with that next week. And also in the Russia-Ukraine situation, where there's going to be KBW is hosting a FinTech's payment conference. And that's going to be interesting when we're talking about the SWIFT payment system, where there'll be sanctions on that, and kind of how Russia maybe deal with these sanctions as a kind of new horizon on with all the FinTech companies. And then kind of moving away to more domestic issues in the U.S., we've got the non-farm payrolls report for February that's going to be released, and that's going to be a major data point for the Fed, especially on the wages front and seeing if the labor market is you know, getting any more supply. If the labor participation rate is going up, could tell a lot about what will happen at the Fed meeting.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely all be watching that. I mean, especially it feels like we're in this big oil versus energy or electricity moment right now, right? So it's kind of everything's up in the air. You can't frack anymore, but also we're not making batteries fast enough and everything hasn't transitioned fast enough. So obviously we'll see what happens there, right?
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much, Kim Khan. You have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Well, everyone, that wraps it up for us here on The Weekend Bite. Everyone stay safe and have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.